Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour, and happy Friday. It is August 11th, and we're looking at a pretty, pretty nice day across the upper Midwest. All the temperatures and forecasts look pretty nice. And a special hello to Hartford at 94.1 and AM 1290 in Madison. Good morning at Faith 104.7 in Duluth at 90.5. Fargo, good morning. Faith 1200, Sioux Falls, Faith 1270. You're looking to have a near-perfect day there. In Waterloo, Faith, 93.1 and AM 1090. Good morning. Rapid City, South Dakota. How about this? 88.3 KLMP. Good morning. International Falls, always sunny today, but a little bit cooler than the average around the area. It's going to be 76. Kind of nice. And that would be the Bridge, 91.9. So I've been studying the Book of Ruth lately. Gee, Bill, you're more boring than we thought. No. Book of Ruth is amazing, and I'm thinking of Naomi, and of course, her name means pleasant, but after she returned from Moab, after her husband died and her sons died, and she returns with Ruth, they get back to Bethlehem, and everyone says, can this be Naomi? And she said, don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara now, because the Almighty has made my life bitter, and Mara means bitter. She said, I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. So why call me Naomi? Because that means pleasant. The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me. Can you imagine that your feelings are so intense that you want to change your name to match your feelings? And then amazing to continue reading the story to find out what God did. And God is at work behind the scenes in the Book of Ruth. It's absolutely fascinating. I've been loving it. It's only four chapters. I bet if you started today, you could be done studying it in a couple of days, because it's rich. It's really rich. And sometimes you wonder, is God really at work in my life? And yes, the answer is yes, he is. And sometimes all of your daily, mundane, routine details of life, you think they're routine and mundane, but they're not, because God's at work behind them. Very cool. All right, we have a great show. We have Carmen LaBurge coming up in just a minute. And it's going to be a great, great morning. Dr. Rosemary Stein, Saving America One Child at a Time. And then Adam Holtz from Plugged In Ministries. And as we're starting to look at the school year coming up, we're going to start talking to some of our friends about what it's going to be like to get yourself equipped. Greg Howe is going to come up from InterVarsity Fellowship in the second hour. So glad you're with us today. It's 7 minutes after the hour. I'll be right back with Carmen. Things are looking clear as a devil. Good morning. 8 minutes after the hour, a Virginia man is the victim of the best home intrusion ever. A man told Arlington County Police he returned from a trip late Sunday night and found someone had entered his apartment and cleaned up his place. That was it. Nothing appeared to be missing, although some things were rearranged. You know, kind of nice when an intruder comes in and rearranges and cleans up your apartment. That'd be kind of nice. The man says that he does not employ a maid and has no idea who the mystery cleaner is. So anyway, you know, sometimes crime works well. It's good. Carmen LaBurge is a regular guest, and you can find her at reconnectwithcarmen.com. Carmen, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Bill.
All right, let's start talking about this poor Google engineer who I thought did kind of a nice, gentle job of making a point, and boy, he just got hammered.
Okay, so before we talk about the Google engineer, I have to comment on the guy who came home and he found his house clean.
I know.
So, well, because you immediately, I mean, like, you say that, and I'm like, okay, I feel like there's a story in the New Testament about, you know, a person who spends time cleaning out their whole house, and then they don't actually then guard it. And so what ultimately then moves in are lots of a greater number of negative, in this case, spirits.
Yes.
And so I'm thinking, oh, I hope there's a Christian somewhere in proximity to this guy to say, hey, look, now that your life is cleaned out, right, now that you've had this very interesting experience of grace, let's talk about all the good things, all the good practices, the clean living that now needs to be moved in to that newly freed and newly cleaned open space.
Yeah, there's a golden opportunity there for some
absolutely
for some Christian with their radar up to go reach this guy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And
then
each one of us, right? I mean, the Spirit moves in, the Spirit cleans house, and then, you know, I just litter it right back up.
Exactly.
All right, so Google.
This poor engineer, here's what he claimed, Carmen. He claimed that women on average show higher interest in people over things. He also made a claim that women on average are too cooperative, and that women on average are more prone to anxiety, and that women on average want a work-life balance.
Yes.
And he lost his job over
and
that.
And for this, he must be punished.
Yes. Oh, indeed.
So, this story is a great example of kind of how far our culture has moved in terms of just thinking reasonably about things and really our ability to talk about things that are frankly quite obvious. So we all know that men and women are different. I mean, we actually know that. If you've grown up in the context of either a family or a larger community populated by both men and women, you know men and women are different. And so it's not just anti-scientific or counterintuitive. It's actually contrary to our experience, what we know to be true, that which accords with reality. For someone to say, men and women are absolutely no different. You cannot suggest that they're different. You cannot treat them differently. And there must be an absolutely equal number of both of them in every environment at all times. It's a completely unreasonable, anti-experiential, anti-scientific response, and yet it's the politically correct response.
Mm-hmm.
And so what he's suffering is, you know, the reality of the political correctness of our culture. I have no doubt that this young engineer will find a job. You know, we're talking about a person who's obviously was highly skilled enough that Google attracted him away from a PhD program at Harvard.
Yeah.
So he's not an intellectual slouch.
Yeah.
Right. That's exactly right. So this is a guy that's going to have a job. The question, I think, is not just internal for Google, because obviously it's a system, an internal culture fraught with problems. That's been evidenced, in this conversation. But there's a larger cultural conversation where we really have to be able to honestly say to each other, we actually do know that men and women are different.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pausing because you've spoken such truth right now. I don't know what else needs to be said. I mean, where can we have a discussion about sex differences and occupational choices and work-family trade-offs? I mean, we think and act differently. Isn't that okay to have that conversation?
Well, and we have different biological realities.
Mm-hmm.
We have different biological needs. You know, we get to the place where it's okay for you to go gray and it's not okay for me to go gray. So I need a day off every 6 weeks to go get my hair colored.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a work-life balance issue for me that men my age are not dealing with. Now, am I allowed to say that out in the public square and out in the real world of conversation? Look, everybody knows it's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that our ability to just get to the place where we're actually honest, as opposed to feeling like we have to parrot whatever the politically correct mantra is of the day. And by the way, that is ever changing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to stick with the never-changing Word of God. I'm going to stick with men and women are equally created in the image of God. Let's go there if we want to talk about equality and we want to talk about why we ought to treat people, men and women, the same way. We ought to treat them the same way because we are both equally made in the image of God. However, we are made distinctly male and female, and there are differences, and those differences matter.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the direction that I would go with the conversation. You know, I'm going to rely on the never-changing Word of God in the midst of an ever-changing cultural conversation about the sexes.
Mm-hmm. And Carmen, when you take a day every 6 months to go color your hair, it looks really good. You know, when guys color their hair, you know, you can pretty much tell because they use like Kiwi Black shoe polish. And you go, boy, does that look stupid.
That's good.
All
right. That's good. Yeah.
We'll take a short break. When we come back more with Carmen LeBurge, we're going to talk a little bit about North Korea and what would be a good, solid biblical response. All right. Thanks for being with us. It's 15 minutes after the hour.
When I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes.
Good morning, 18 minutes after the hour. I'm talking to Carmen LeBurge from ReconnectWithCarmen.com. Carmen, as I'm looking at some of these pictures of Kim Jong-il Square. They literally have like 30,000 people packed in. And I'm looking at this picture going, I cannot see one porta potty. How are they pulling this off?
They have secrets, man.
They must.
I don't know how they do this. But they have secrets. Yeah. You know, the reality of living under a totalitarian regime is actually hard for us to imagine. And, you know, if you've been told you have to stand and clap for a certain period of time and you cannot stop and you must do so enthusiastically and you must, you know, and you must do so, you must appear to be actually worshiping this individual. I suspect that your ability to control other biological issues comes along with that. I mean, if you've literally, your whole life belongs to the state, and you've been told since the day you were born, you know, you were born for the sole purpose of serving whatever ends this particular human individual sees fit. I suspect that they're not thinking about the same kinds of things that we are freely considering.
Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about being pro-America, but I also want to talk about being pro-gospel. So how are we going to be pro-gospel in the situation where President Trump is saying, we're coming at you with fire and fury, and it'll be unlike anything you've ever seen, the world has ever seen. Where obviously, you know, he's going to call him evil, which I like. Let's just call it what it is. But what do you think about our response?
So I think that every time Christians survey the world, and we recognize that there are certainly in every generation people who are evil, genuinely evil. Mm-hmm. We have them in our own lives. And so I guess part of me would say, okay, the Gerasene demoniac, Jesus encounters a guy who is so out of his mind, his own family can't control him. We're talking about somebody in whom evil is actually physically dwelling.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus does not annihilate that man, right? Jesus and Jesus brings the reality of God into that man's life.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I recognize, right, that Jesus is Jesus, and we are the representatives of Jesus in this generation, and so our experience of encountering evil is different than his, but he's still the answer to it.
Mm-hmm.
And any time that a gospel-oriented person turns to the weapons of the world and says, this is how we're going to slay evil, this is how we're going to solve the problem of evil, we've actually forgotten for a moment that the problem of evil is already solved. And that the end of the book is already written, and that Jesus is the victor, and that we are citizens of his kingdom, representatives of him here on earth today. So those millions of North Korean people are going to spend an eternity in hell if we obliterate them tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
If we drop bombs on them that take away their lives, we actually strip ourselves of the opportunity to share the gospel with them. So the preservation of our own safety is an issue and a question. but the eternal destiny of other people has to be our heart's concern as well.
Mm-hmm. What about the fact that we're dealing with a guy who is completely off his rocker, though?
Who isn't completely off their rocker? I mean, right? You either have the mind of Christ or mm-hmm. you're completely out of your mind. And
right.
So I think, I think that our contemporary cultural judgment of who is and isn't in their right mind ultimately comes down to, is this person operating out of the mind of Christ?
Mm-hmm.
And if they're operating out of the mind of Christ, they are in the right mind. If they're operating out of any other mind and any other motive, they're actually out of their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so, or they're out of the mind of Christ. And so I'm really not willing to say this guy is any more out of his mind than every other world leader who is operating outside of the mind of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many of them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what about President Trump's evangelical advisors who say, according to Romans 13, you have authority to use whatever means necessary to stop evil?
I think that's a gross misinterpretation of Romans chapter 13. I don't deny that that human governments are under God's sovereign design and control.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely, recognize God's sovereignty over everything. But I also recognize, that God gives people the freedom of their will, and God has given us as a democracy the opportunity to elect our own leadership. And we are not a theocracy. And so when we're going to point to the Bible as the governing document of this country, we're misrepresenting who we are as the United States of America. Our
mm-hmm.
governing document is called the Constitution of the United States of America. It has something called Article 1, Section 8. It gives the kind of power that some are saying belongs solely to Donald Trump. It actually recognizes that power belongs to Congress. And so when we have these conversations and when we hear people of influence who have big churches say things that take the Bible seriously but are not handling it carefully, I believe we have to call them out. And
mm-hmm.
we have to say, let's be mindful that the United States of America is not equivalent to the church, and that the church is governed by the Bible, and that the United States of America is not. And so I think that it's not untrue to say that God elevates people to positions of power in a worldly or temporal sense. But how do you point to one person in one country and say God has elevated that person and given them the moral authority to take out this other guy, and not at some level apply that same logic on the other side and
mm-hmm.
say, God has lifted up this individual in this country, and he has the moral authority to take out this other guy. So I think that the contest of moral authority granted in Romans 13 is the power granted to the state to bring justice among its own people, not necessarily the authority to carry out acts of annihilation in other parts of the world. Now, there is a just war theory that emerges out of this conversation, but that's not even what was articulated by this particular spiritual advisor to the president.
Mm-hmm. Carmen, if I sat next to you in high school, I would have been saying, hey, Carmen, what answer did you get for number four?
I might have been cheating off of you. So.
No, or contraire, just the opposite. All right, we just have a couple minutes left. I want to ask you about this, the mayor of Nashville. Boy, how sad was that? Her child died of an opioid overdose. She gets a wake-up call in the middle of the night, assuming maybe a policeman got shot or something in her city has gone on, and the police say, no, your son is dead.
Yeah, so the Berrys have one son. His name is Max. He's 22 years old. He is a person who has struggled for some period of his young adult life with substance abuse and successfully went through a rehab program about a year ago, and then, yes, just a couple of Saturday nights ago, the Berrys got, the knock on the door that no one ever wants to get, and were informed that their son had overdosed in Colorado. We now know that part of what he overdosed on was opioids. I think that for Megan Berry and her husband, this is obviously an incredibly sad personal experience, I suspect it will strengthen her resolve, not only on this issue, but on other issues of community concern. She really is a person who seems to have a very big heart for social concerns, and I suspect that we will now see her, we will see God use her at the forefront of these opioid conversations nationally, because she now has a very personal and a deeply tragic story to tell.
Indeed. So, Carmen, before you go, I just would like to make an announcement to any listener in your area. If you are an intruder and you have good cleaning supplies, feel free to break into Carmen's house.
Yeah, the door's almost always open, so there you go.
All right, thanks, Carmen. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Bill. You too.
You bet. 27 minutes after the hour, we'll take a short break and be back. Coming up next, Dr. Rosemary Stein will be with us at 40 minutes, too. Good morning. Half past the hour. We're going to take a little break for news. Dr. Rosemary Stein from the Christian Medical and Dental Association is up next in about 9 minutes. Twenty-five minutes until the top of the hour. Romans 12:10 says that we should honor one another above ourselves. Pastor Sam Crabtree offers this analogy of what this looks like in our day-to-day lives.
Here's the way I think about outdoing one another and showing honor. I think of it as an Olympic event in the house or in the office or in the church. In the real Olympics, the way you win a gold medal in the sprints or in swimming or whatever is you have to outdo everybody else and they lose. But in outdoing everyone else in showing honor, if I do the best job around of showing honor, everybody else wins because they get more honor than I do, because I'm outdoing them in showing honor. So I try to go for the gold in showing honor. It's a biblical exhortation right there in the text, and therefore I think we have biblical warrant in trying to get aggressive and polished and proactive in showing honor to other people.
That was Pastor Sam Crabtree. You can go on our website, myfaithradio.com. Go to the search engine and type in Sam Crabtree, or you can try Affirm Others God's Centered Way, a bunch of words like that. That'll probably get you there. And if it doesn't, I really apologize. Anyway, you can send me a letter, bill@myfaithradio.com, and say, hey, thanks for that. That was really helpful. All right, we'll take a little break. When we come back, Dr. Rosemary Stein, Saving America One Child at a Time. The doctor is in the house. Be back in a minute.
Political correctness is so ingrained in our culture that objectivity and reason is inconsequential. This is Jim Garlow. Be careful not to use language or behavior that may offend someone. So the destruction of a child in the womb is a woman exercising her right to choose. Marriage is considered love, a love relationship between any combination of a couple men or women or whatever. A thug is now called behaviorally challenged. One group forcing another to use concocted terms obscures reality and purposely creates confusion. Forget any objective dealing with real issues. The users of PC tactics typically hate biblical truth, traditional morality, sexual restraint, personal responsibility, or any other concept based on unchanging truth revealed by an almighty God for our individual and society's good. We can't allow ourselves to be coerced into doing nothing and saying nothing. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
That makes me laugh. I love it. That's the theme song for Dr. Rosemary Stein from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. If you hear that song, that's her walk-on music. Rosemary, good morning.
Good morning.
So nice to
see
you.
How are you, Bill?
I'm good, thanks. All right. I hate to even say this, but back to school is kind of around the corner.
Yes, it is.
And wondering, maybe you have some tips for parents as to how to get ready.
I do. I give tips all day long at the office.
Okay.
Well, the first thing is get them back to their sleep patterns, because most of us sort of let our kids drift into later bedtimes, later wake times.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that's not a good habit for kids that are going back to school. So this is the time, if you haven't done it before, I actually really tell parents that don't let them drift to noontime wake times, because that's not good for the body, and that doesn't build a good early to bed, early to rise person.
Mm-hmm.
But make sure that they're waking up, I say, at least between 8 and 8:30, and that they're going to bed once again between 9 and 9:30, whatever is, you know, more age appropriate if they're in an elementary school child, or if they're in middle school or in high school. So that's important. And start talking about making sure that your kids eat breakfast. Too many kids go to school without having something good, nutritious in their belly. And I must tell you the truth, that I really don't think that those school breakfasts are getting the jobs done.
Okay.
I don't know about in your neck of the woods, but here in North Carolina, for the most part, they're getting honey buns and chocolate milk. And most parents would be in horror to see what the kids are getting, and they just ditch the breakfast and the lunches that they're getting anyway. So that's one thing to be setting the schedules and talking about and making sure that the kids are in a mindset so they understand these things are actually important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think in high school, for me, it was ding-dongs and Mountain Dew. I couldn't figure out why I had trouble concentrating.
Well, yeah, that might have been it, Bill.
Yeah, it could have been it. So sleep. Eating, important to get that back into kind of a nice regular routine. I can see how sleep would be absolutely critical. I mean, these kids in the summertime, they do sleep later, and it's going to be a harsh reality when the alarm clock goes off if you're setting it for the first time on the first day of school.
That's right. And then the other thing is obviously the electronic devices. Their brains might be much more attached to those devices than they were during the school year. So we have to put those down and put those away and set very, very stringent limits mm-hmm. on the time that they can spend on that, because they're not going to be able to reach for that cell phone, and you have to cut that habit. Their little brains are little creatures of habit. So if you allow them to live in a world where they're allowed to do certain things without even thinking about it, it's very hard for them to break that habit, and they're going to be disconcerted.
Yeah, Rosemary, there was an article, some Stanford researchers were saying that we're sending kids maybe to school too early. Would you comment on that?
Oh, it's an interesting study because there's true validity to it. But at the same time, I think the conclusion is wrong. So what they're saying is that we're sending the kids to school too early, which I'm all for. I think that kids should stay in school even through kindergarten for the most part. But what happened is that some parents are not getting the job of teaching them how to follow instructions and have respect done before they go into school. So we had to keep lowering the age because the kids were being too disruptive. But on the other hand, what it's saying is, well, just let the kids sort of naturally mature. Well, that's not going to get the job done either. So they do better if you let them naturally mature just a little bit. But if you're getting the groundwork done of having the child follow directions, pay attention, and give respect to their elders, then they're really going to be able to get into school, even kindergarten, and be able to learn. And that's what we're just not doing. And that's where I think that the study is flawed, because they're not saying anything of what's the parent side of this responsibility, which is actually quite large, but we're not understanding that today.
Okay, so if we cut that process a little short, is there going to be consequences that are going to be paying down the road as far as socialization issues later in life?
And that's exactly it, that they don't understand their place in life. We're not really teaching that actively. But the other thing is being able to focus and pay attention to what adults are saying, being able to look at them, to listen, and to follow their directions. Remember, our teachers used to be able to tell us, kids, get in line, and we would all stand up in unison and know how to get in line in size order. But our kids today are not able to do that. It's not because their brains are different. It's because we're not teaching them those important abilities at the appropriate age.
That may seem like a little simple thing you just said, stand up and get in line, but it's actually reflective of something pretty significant as you get to be an adult in terms of being able to respond to authority or to follow orders or to know how to be part of a cooperative team.
And that's exactly what school is supposed to be. They're supposed to be, let's say, 20 kids in a classroom, and they're all supposed to have their eyes on the teacher and be able to open your books to page 3. And what? I don't even know what you're talking about. And they're looking around, or they didn't even listen to her. And,
yeah.
and everything started off wrong in 20 little brains.
And teachers should not be spending the majority of their energy trying to get that to happen. Kids should be able to pull out their books and open to page 3.
Yes, exactly. And so that's where we're getting it wrong. We're teaching our children shapes and letters, and that's only reflective of being able to follow directions. And instead of that, if we paid more attention to their actual following simple directions and two-pronged directions, then they would be able to learn. They just naturally are going to learn those shapes and the letters by the time they're 5 and 6.
Mm-hmm.
So we should make sure that we do it in a sequential and an age-appropriate manner.
Yeah, Rosemary, I'm going to take a break. When I come back, I want to ask you the question, are schools, are they producing adults? Are we actually able to help produce adults in our schools today? It's 15 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm speaking to Dr. Rosemary Stein from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. Be right back. Minutes until the top of the hour. I have Dr. Rosemary Stein on the line. We're talking about getting your kids ready to go back to school. And Rosemary, before I get to my loaded question about our schools producing adults, I want to first just defer to the teachers out there that because we love teachers here at Faith Radio, and we're just such fans of what they do. But a lot of teachers are working kind of in a broken system, and they're discouraged. And we talk about how there's a lot of problems that they have to face, and it's just not about teaching.
That's absolutely right. And, it's sort of a community, a holistic problem. And it starts from the beginning. It starts at home. And we're just merely not getting the job done to start with our kids, but we're not continuing there. And then I feel for the teachers because they're given a curriculum that's not age-appropriate today. And what I mean by that is kids can learn best at certain ages, but they're not being given the things that the kids can learn the best at the appropriate times. And so that's making the problem worse. And what you were saying about how our schools are not producing grown-ups is so true. I see it every day. I have high school grads that are coming in, and they have no idea how to conduct themselves in life and how not to fall to the temptations of what they're going to be up against when they go to college or they go on in the world. And it's once again, a two-pronged problem. Education, our education system's not preparing them, but we as parents, we're not preparing them either.
Now, we don't want to make parents feel guilty because everyone's doing their best, but is there, you know, some practical encouragement you can give parents right now so they don't feel defeated?
Yes, really, don't feel defeated because it's all in our hands. We've just been given a bad playbook, and we need to get the playbook out again. And the playbook is really God's playbook. If we look through Proverbs, you're going to find a lot of admonition about how we should be building a person. We've been fed some untruths about that the kids are just what they are. And, yes, that's true to an extent. They have their personalities, but we can build character, and that's the way we should be seeing it. Their personalities are they tend sometimes to be a little on the lazy side, or this one might be a little bit dishonest, but in that, there's also, he's got a great heart. He wants to do things for other people, and those are his gifts and his traits. Well, we build those two together to make sure that our child, no matter what, has character, and they know, and we know that they're going to have difficult points in their lives and things that they're challenged with. But we make sure that that character is what they stand on. And, of course, the love of God if you're a Christian.
Mm. Rosemary, this is always one of the questions I love asking the most, and that is, because this makes my heart so happy, do you have another Saving America One Child at a Time story to share with us?
Yes, I sure do.
Oh, good.
I had a little girl came in yesterday, and her name is Kimberly, and she came in a couple of months ago. Her mom was very upset because her two other children, two boys, have a lot of behavioral issues, and one is actually autistic. And now Kimberly, who seemed to be very smart, very bright, but had a bit of a speech delay, is going the way of her two brothers, and she was concerned, and actually she had to repeat kindergarten because she was just not getting it, and now she's six. And so I examined this little girl, and she's very, very bright, but rather undisciplined in a home where two boys are really rambunctious and hard to control. And she was letting her anger get the most of her. But the school was misunderstanding what was going on and thought, oh, she has learning issues, and she's probably best to be disabled. So mom started working with her with getting some focusing exercises and some chores and starting to write, very patiently. And we got a Noah Webster's reading primer out. And I said, let's help her to read. And so deliberately and slowly and spending the time that this young girl that perhaps wasn't getting the attention she needed because of her two brothers, so mom has been spending 1 and 2 hours with her every day, which is really a sacrifice for the mom, but she understood that a sacrifice needed to be made for this young lady. Well, she comes in yesterday, and she sits on my exam table quietly listening to me in what I call the thinking position, which is just her fingers and her hands are together. She's listening, and she's looking at me while I speak. And she's starting to read as she starts first grade. So what I told mom is keep at it, but also keep at the teacher. Continue to go in there every 2 weeks. Make sure that the teacher's attention is on her child and she's giving you feedback. Don't wait until January and February when she might be anxious, the teacher might be, because she's not hitting her benchmark. Continue to go in there and help her on a daily basis. And this girl is so flourishing. She's starting to read, she's starting to smile, and she told me that she wants to be a doctor like Dr. Rose.
Oh, my goodness, that's so sweet. All right, I know you have an event coming up in September, Moms March Across America. I'm just curious, tell us more about that.
Oh, yes, thank you for asking. A good friend of mine, Kimberly Fletcher, invited me to come over to Omaha, Nebraska, because we're going to do a Moms March. Because, you know, a lot of us moms are fed up with the fact that our culture is not doing well, our kids are not doing well, and we feel that America is not doing well. But we think that it's really up to us, the women, to be able to rally around ourselves and also our children and be able to be that moral compass that our families need. And we want to send a message to the rest of America that we can get this job done if we're praying, if we're working, if we're sacrificing our time and our efforts so that America can get back to raising patriots and raising great Christian leaders once again. Sarah Palin is going to be there. So is Candy Carson, the wife of Dr. Ben Carson, and the Duck Dynasty mom, I believe her name is Missy Robertson, is mm-hmm. going to be there as well.
Well, that sounds like a great thing, and there's never underestimate the power of moms. They're the best.
That's right. It was Mary, the mom of Jesus, that had him for the first 12 years, and grounded him in what a family value was. And we often don't want to go there as Christians because we don't want to confuse the lines between honoring and worshiping.
Right.
But we need to remember that the place of a mom is an invaluable one in society.
Yeah. And is Mary not one of the great examples of faith in Scripture?
That's absolutely true. And so is Elizabeth, John yes. the Baptist's mom.
Yeah, yeah. Rosemary, such a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend, and we'll chat again soon.
You do as well, Bill. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you. It's 4 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a little break. Up next, we're going to talk to Adam Holtz, talk about movies going on this week in the theaters. Be back in a minute.
Starting your day with faith, hope, and clarity. The Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold on Faith Radio.
Thanks for listening this morning. We're so glad you're here. If you have not gotten a new welcome packet, do so. MyFaithRadio.com. Get a new listener packet. We'll give you all the information you'll need about the station. So glad you're with us today. Coming up next, Adam Holtz is going to be here with us in just about 8 minutes after the hour. See you in a bit. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.